Excellent. And now, of course, the moment for which people actually wait probably 168 hours between the times when we actually run the official weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar with Gabriella Peralta. Gabriella, the airwaves are now yours.
Okay, so the weather in Lincoln is highs of 12 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. It will be a cloudy and cool day with outbreaks of rain or drizzle.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
It feels as though the world is right, really, no matter what stresses and strains and challenges you might have, as long as we can have Gabriella Peralta on the Morning Edition launching the whole programme, where it's just coming up to 3 minutes past 9 a.m. in Gibraltar. Do the clocks go back this weekend, Gibraltar? So it is the same.
Yeah,
so,
same
for
the UK.
Right. I mean, doesn't that create quite confusion with the rest of Europe, or is it just a case of, no, it's OK, we can sort our way through that?
Oh, I don't know. We're always the same time as Spain, so I think Spain does it too.
Ah, all right. That's okay.
Because
it clearly creates a momentary havoc with our correspondents in the United States, because they stay on various other summer times and so on. It's magic. Which brings us neatly around to something which I've just encountered on your Facebook page. We've had the Literary Festival in Gibraltar. It gets even better in November. Between the 20th and the 26th of November 2017, it's the Gibraltar International Magic Festival.
Yes, second annual one. Had a first one last year. I didn't get to attend, so I'm going to it this year.
We just
have a group of musicians turn up.
Is this a case of they clearly do the classic line of making the Rock of Gibraltar disappear, or do they not go quite that far?
Well, not that far, because they only got a stage to work on. They don't have the entire country. But, I've never seen it before, so I don't quite know what they do. I'm looking forward to seeing it this year.
Oh. Well, it's an international gala. There's a whole range of things that I'm looking at. You can do all manner of wonderful things there. So is this a new avenue? I mean, you said it's just the second Gibraltar International mm-hmm. Magic Festival. Is this going to be a case of, you know, Gibraltar actually becomes slightly more mystical, more magical? I mean, we've always known it was a magical part of the world, but the International Magic Festival seems to be taking it to another level.
Yes, we love festivals in Gibraltar, so I think recently in the past, I'd say 7 years, we've really, you know, we started music festivals, we started a literary festival, we started a magic festival 2 years ago, and now I guess we're going to have to try and find other festivals to start. But it's just a part of, because Gibraltar is a small place, so we're just trying to make sure that we have things to do, things for tourists to see, things for locals to see, and that we try and keep our cultural calendar as busy as possible, because after all, when you've only got 3 miles to work with, you're trying to keep the country busy with 3 miles.
Still, having said that, 3 miles is a substantial part of... I mean, if you're an average grasshopper, for instance, or indeed a snail... Mm-hmm. 3 miles is several universes combined. It's beyond the final frontier. It's literally going into a whole new adventure scenario. That 3 miles could be a joke. I mean, you know, consider Frodo. And let's face it, we have to, because we need to know what his state of consciousness is after last week, when we believe he was actually alert and alive.
Oh, he's been asleep. The past couple of mornings, he just hasn't been able to rise.
I mean, you know, do you think Frodo is going to maybe be interested in the magical festival if food can magically be made to appear and magically disappear? Be a way.
If it can get him in, he probably would be. Maybe they could have a little Frodo act. He can be the magician's assistant with a little suit and bow tie and hat.
Hmm.
Who knows?
You know, I think Gabriella, you're thinking along exactly the right lines here. I can see that opening up as a whole new field. I mean, did you attend anything last year? Did you say you missed out last year, so this will be your first time you'll be attending the festival?
I missed out last year, yeah. I don't know, I just didn't go. I'm going to it this year.
Well, if people are actually interested in working through this, you can go to the usual 3ws.magic.gi. Nothing to do with General Infantryman, which of course is G.I. Joe, but Gibraltar, presumably. That's the website to take you to the Gibraltar International Magic Festival, usual 3ws.magic.gi. You know, we really should actually try and utilise your skills and techniques there to sort of get a further link with somebody here, because we've got a couple of magicians here who've come in from various times, and we could actually have some magic across the airways, really.
Yeah, definitely. You can see who wants to have a chat.
Yes, exactly. Or indeed just kind of magically sort of appear in one dimension and go into another. And so, do you do any magic yourself, actually, Gabrielle? Because, you know, do you do any card tricks or sleight of hands? No.
That's, no.
Well, never mind. Who knows what's happened? And the rest of the day, as we prepare the way to actually head off to our ace film critic, Richard Fitzwilliams, curiously, still actually not going to go down the line of Justice League of America or indeed Thor and Ragnarok and so on. And as we said earlier, he's looking at Call Me By Your Name and Breathe. What sort of things do you have in store for the next few hours? Having now, I mean, basically, it is peak. Let's face it, Gabrielle. Once you've delivered the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar, we sympathise with you. It can be quite a task to actually say, right, well, you know, that's obviously peak time for the day. How do I actually keep the rest of the day working?
Yeah, it's just back to work after this, but we've got a good story on the front page of today's Chronicle, which. Was a family from Portsmouth who walked into the Chronicle and said our uncle had written a letter to our aunt, our pregnant aunt, 74 years ago from Gibraltar, and it was found in a jumble sale in a bag. And someone brought it into the Portsmouth News. They ran an article on it. The family saw their uncle, his letter in the newspaper, and contacted them, and they got reunited with a letter 74 years on. So it's quite a sweet story.
Absolutely. It could be a time machine, could be working through other matters of bits and pieces. In case people are actually hearing some noises off as far as the studio is concerned, that's because our fabulous construction workers are working just outside the Siren studio. It's marvellous, really. We could have all manner of wondrous things there. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. And can we look forward to connecting with you again in 168 hours' time for more magical weather forecasts and information from Gibraltar?
Very precise. I will be back.
Excellent.
Takes me to you. I'm so nervous, I just sit and smile. Your house is only another mile. Thank you, driver, for getting me here. You'll be an inspector, have no fear. I want it. Broken sand 6 months every day, just to drive to my baby. Broken sand 6 months each day, 'cause I drive my baby every way.
Magic horse. 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 Magic horse.
I suppose you could go back to the old line that somebody who wants never actually gets, but never mind. We've just talked about the magical Gibraltar second annual Festival of Magic, which is wondrous, and we say bienvenue now to the entree to yet another wonderful festival, which will be equally wonderful in terms of the 2nd of November to the 17th of December. Of course, it's our ace film critic, Richard Fitzwilliams. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Alex.
Jean, bonjour, one might say, in fact.
Indeed, yes. One of our top film critics, Marianne Gray, who contributes, as I do, to www.movies1.tv. You can often find our thoughts on various films and those of other film critics, but it's a pretty comprehensive guide to not only the movies coming up, but also with reviews of those every week which open. And we've got it's estimated some 3,000 followers, so if anyone would like to read in more detail about each week's movies, I would recommend it. And Marianne asked me to, she'd been involved for some years in the French Film Festival. There are 46 titles, 300 screenings over 6 weeks in 30 cities. And one of the exciting aspects of it is restorations of Jean de Florette and Manon des Sources by Claude Berry, which are among my favorites, and also a tribute to the late Jean Moreau, which very, very significant, because she was a patron of the festival in its early years, and of course she's one of the greatest French actresses of all time. Also, there's a new film by François Ozon, The Double Lover, and another favorite director of mine, Agnès Jaoui, Aurora. So those interested in French films should take note.
Is this it's the Silver Jubilee edition of the French Film Festival UK, so clearly it's been going for 25 years. I must admit it hasn't been on our radar for some reason. So good news there, Richard, actually. We must actually explore it a little bit more fully with venues from Glasgow and Edinburgh to London, Inverness, Dundee, Belfast, Warwick and Leicester. It's pretty wide-ranging.
It is indeed, yes, and
One's tempted to say, Richard, it's the sort of thing Jean-Luc Picard would be very, very impressed with, a French film festival celebrating the best of France, as we segue neatly into an introduction for yourself, Richard, because we have Dr. Chris Downes, who's with us in the studio for his first production. How are you, Chris?
That could have been the slickest changeover I've ever heard in my life, Alex. That was extraordinarily well done. Well done.
I'd like to feel that we can connect you to film and the various other bits and pieces. You managed to locate the studio.
Formidable.
Exactly. Richard, that's the French Film Festival. Let's move on now to Call Me By Your Name.
Which is, I thought, absolutely perfect movie. I mean, it's a moving love story, and it's very suited to the operatic style of Luca Guadagnino, who you will remember from movies such as I Am Love. It is an absolutely sensuous movie, because it's set in the 1980s. Elio is the 17-year-old son of a professor of archaeology, played by Michael Stuhlbarg, and his wife Anella, played by Mira Sissar, who let out their room in their house outside a small town in northern Italy to Oliver, played by Armie Hammer, who's an American graduate student, and Elio transcribes and plays music, and his relationship with Oliver develops, and we follow its moods through the score. And this is Elio falling in love, he's 17, for the first time, and their passion becomes mutual, and his life develops a meaning, which his flirting with local girls totally lacked. And this, the gay romance in the movie has a parallel with the sexual relationships between the older and the teenage male, which were approved by Greek society. There's a very memorable scene by where a bronze statue by the famous Greek sculptor Praxiteles is raised from the deep, and an excellent performance by Timothée Chalamet, who is Elio's sexual and emotional awakenings we follow, and it's a very sensitive performance, often in close-up, including a climactic, some climactic moments that I don't want to reveal, but really greatly admired. Armie Hammer is excellent as Oliver, and the chemistry between them is spontaneous and it's captivating. And
Richard, as you know, Armie Hammer was the quintessential Ilya Kuryakin in a movie that I know you will come to realise will be a classic one day, alongside Lawrence of Arabia and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., done, of course, by Guy Ritchie. It's
you phrase things immaculately and package them with style.
Yeah.
I must register strong disagreement, of course.
I thought you might, Richard. I thought you might. Chris, having seen the trailer and studio, having listened to Richard's views there, will Corby be by your name be on your list of movies you might be checking out?
It won't, but not for the reasons you might think. Oh. I was a BFI film theatre projectionist for 3 years. And that included me showing films to mostly myself for 3 years. And
Richard would have been there.
I'm sure he would.
Big supporter of the BFI.
Immediately have meant I would have had to have a break, because as soon as somebody turned up, we'd have to have a break. We usually run the film, this was over in Grimsby at the Wicked Film Centre, which is still running, thank goodness. I got to experience world cinema at its very best and very worst. I'm not saying for 1 second that Call Me By My Name is
No, exactly.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I would just say, with its total lack of spaceships, I would probably not be terribly interested.
It hasn't got any, but it has an elegant relationship. It has the most gorgeous, I haven't managed to dwell on this yet, but I simply must. It's the settings, the exteriors, the musical score. I mean, this could have been perilously empty and devoid of drama, but especially as it's over 2 hours, but it's got James Ivory, which is a joy. I mean, this is really, really something that connects with a viewer on a rare and intimate level. I absolutely loved it. No spaceships, but can I not persuade you?
Well, I think you've certainly persuaded our construction workers, Richard, because they're making great noises
of
approval.
They're crazy about it outside. They've got extra large drills just to celebrate the whole thing, yeah, just because we're on air.
Wondrous. This is great. The Los Angeles Times, a ravishing event, really. So thumbs up there. Anyway, let's move on. Let's keep breathing, Richard. Yes, it's okay, Richard. Don't worry. We'll work with our microphones and ensure that hailing frequencies are maintained throughout. Over to you, Richard, for Breathe.
For Breathe, which was the film that opened the London Film Festival, and this is directed by Andy Serkis, and it's absolutely impossible to see it without being amazed by the resilience of the human spirit. I mean, you open with this quintessentially English scene of cricket. Charismatic entrepreneur Robin Cavendish, played by Andrew Garfield, who is so good most recently in Hacksaw Ridge, of course, meets Diana, played by Claire Foy, who, of course, has been such a hit as the Queen in The Crown, a noted beauty, marries her, takes her to Kenya where he works. Tragically, he's paralyzed by polio, and back in London, unable to move, he's kept alive by a respirator while she gives birth to her son, Jonathan. But he simply wants to die. He's not going to have any life at all. But when his wife, aided by family and friends, decides to move him to a new home and to experiment with the different ways that he might be able to see some of the world, then his spirit soars, and you've got this extraordinary invention of a special wheelchair which allows him to go outside, travel in a car, then go abroad. If there's a power failure, the respirator, unbelievably, and it really is extraordinary, to give him oxygen, it can just be operated by a hand pump. This happens in Spain for a while, and he's able to enjoy the company of his son, Jonathan Cavendish, who, most importantly, has produced this remarkable film. good chemistry between the principals, Garfield and Foy. He's versatile and, you know, he's transformed from dashing entrepreneur to paralyzed patient, so he's totally believable, I thought. Claire Foy, ideally cast, devoted, tenacious and inventive, and there's a nice turn by Tom Hollander, who plays her twin brothers, very amusing, and Hugh Bonneville, ever reliable, of course, as Professor Teddy Hall, who is the technical whiz kid. And we see also how polio sufferers suffered abroad. There's a scene where he visits a conference in Germany and involves going to a clinic, and you see the way sufferers are kept in the most macabrely restricted conditions. So this really is a supreme example of British grit, and there's plenty of eccentricity in it. I would accept the point some have made that parts of it are over-sentimental, and this is obviously partly sanitized, but when you see a movie like this, and Serkis directs very well, you really can't help but marvel at the courage of those who are involved, and there's tribute to it.
It's wondrous that you got not one but two Spider-Man in the same movie, Tom Hollander and, of course, Andrew Garfield, which is directed by King Kong, Andy Serkis.
Can't go wrong.
It's sensational.
Now, I would go and see that one. Mm. In fact, I have just the young lady who I would take to see that.
There we are. Excellent. And obviously our construction workers agree, again.
There's a guy outside, this is not a joke, with an angle grinder and a piece of sheet metal, just trying to give us a wonderful background noise.
You don't get this on many radio stations, Richard, and you must cherish the moment, you know, on siren radio, really. Andrew Garfield and Claire Foy breathe thumbs up all round from that perspective, which is great. We talked about the French Film Festival. We talked about, clearly, the excitement of Call Me By Your Name and, of course, the construction workers. Anything else you want to briefly mention, Richard?
Apart from mentioning a reason that I would urge listeners to see Call Me By Your Name, I mentioned I Am Love, and Luca Guadagnino also did a bigger splash, which they're a trilogy, really, and this featured a performance to die for by Ralph Fiennes. It was also perfection. I'd also just like to mention Matisse in Nice, which is a wonderful, it's Matisse in his studio, which was in Nice, and it was just a very, very interesting exhibition at the Royal Academy, which shows also the influence of African art and Oriental art on Matisse's work and the way that influenced subsequently so much of Western art. It's his personal collection. It also shows some of the works by him that he inspired. The lovely flower painting, Roses in the Window. There's some still life, and his portraits. So it's a beautifully put together exhibition. And also, don't miss Cézanne, the portraits at the National Portrait Gallery, which I saw yesterday, and perhaps we could dwell on at a future occasion.
Clearly giving that French theme to the fore, Richard. And I know it's only a matter of days before Thor, Ragnarok and Justice League of America will also be coming under your purview as well.
I'll be heading to Florence tomorrow, so we may have to wait a while for Thor.
Well, that's okay. It's Thursday. We could obviously celebrate all manner of things. Now, Richard, just wearing Chris's first hat here, is it Chris Pike? No, it's Chris Dowse. Otherwise, he'd be blinking once for yes and twice for no.
You just go
sounds like... Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Before that there was the Menagerie. But as I actually look to the About Chris Dowse page in Treknology, I see...
Oh, you found that, did you?
We always like to do our research, Chris. Chris Dowse has been involved with Star Trek for over 18 years, writing for Deep Space Nine Comics, the Star Trek Fact Files, StarTrek.com, and Tokyo Pop Star Trek the manga. A regular contributor to Star Trek magazine for a decade, gained his PhD in 2007, and lectures in writing, actually at the University of Lincoln. Formerly the University Centre at Grimsby. That was another experience and another timeline. Going prime time to Kelvin time and back again.
That was an alternative time that I shudder about, quite frankly, in the halcyon halls of Lincoln.
I don't think even Richard has actually, we've shared many a time with Richard in the BFI in London, but I don't think, Richard, you've ever had the joys of the BFI in Grimsby, have you?
That I have not heard. No.
It's a rare treat.
It is indeed. But Richard, of course, you were reviewing the recent spate of Star Trek movies and so on. Where do you kind of position yourself when it comes to the space operatic adventure Star Trek, given, of course, that we're a matter of weeks away, of course, from the release of another one of the Disney-packaged George Lucas Star Wars aspects?
Which is where I would position myself as a fan of Star Wars. Rather, I have to say, than Star Trek, probably the fact that I haven't been a Trekkie, but I do enjoy what I see when it's on the large screen. Of course, I know that aficionados follow every detail about it. And
they do.
Star Wars, I mean, the fascination, it's all part of the fascination. All, you could almost say the obsession with movies dealing with sci-fi. And, I mean, they do dominate the film blockbusters these days. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
Very true.
Well, as we've said frequently, the geeks have inherited the Earth. It's past tense now.
Yes, they have. It is very true. If you consider, that in, say, the 60s, when I began being fascinated by movies, you had the big musicals, you had the Swords and Sandals and other epics, and also, of course, there were fascinating books, an introduction to continental films and so on. But, I mean, those were the big movies where studios relied on them to make their profits. Now so many of these are sci-fi movies, and this has been a trend for a long time. And Star Wars, of course, dates back for, oh goodness, we're moving...
40 years.
40 years, absolutely,
1977. It was a relatively new kid to the block, as opposed to the 51 years that Star Trek has actually been thriving through the whole system.
Good heavens,
We build on the shoulders of giants, Richard. We build on the shoulders of giants.
I wouldn't dare query that comment.
A special get well message to Shailene McKenzie. She has emailed she wasn't able to make the show this morning because something's happened to the muscles in her back and she's unable to walk.
That's unfortunate.
It is. Get well soon, Shailene. I mean, it was clearly given that point of view. I suspect Lauren might not have actually set her alarm at the time. Holly gave her apologies yesterday. Never mind. Chris is with us for another 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That's 900 seconds. We've got Ian Lennox to come through. We've got discussions about German markets and we're going to be finding out about how Trumpism has actually reduced American tourist income by about 40%. Who'd have thought it?
What, that little?
It's astounding, really. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I most certainly have.
Will you be back again in 7 days from now?
I most certainly shall be. I'd also be able, I hope, to report a bit about Florence, and I've not been there about 20 years.
I've not been there for about 20 years. There's another movie that I haven't actually caught as yet. Sorry, Richard, I couldn't resist it.
Holly is the air that I breathe. Dr. Chris Downs is with us in the studio, and in Newcastle we have Newcastle United supporter and general around fine soul, Ian Lennox. How are you, Ian?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Who would have thought, Ian, I can actually say the words, Claudio Bravo kept a clean sheet and saved penalties. Amazing. Never thought it was going to happen, but, you know, good news as far as...
Did he have a good game, then?
He did. And we shall just ease away from that, because have you put in your bid for Newcastle United as yet?
Yes, it's been rejected.
Well, you know, sometimes you just got to... Maybe a consortium is the answer.
I understand it. I'm going to organise a petition in the street to see if I can get a consortium together.
For the benefit of the listener who has not encountered your good self as yet, Ian, and indeed for Dr. Chris Downs, who's sitting in the studio with me, coping with some of the joys of the construction work that's been going on. Although they seem to have actually gone for a tea break now.
I think so. I think either that or they've just used all the tools.
You've got construction workers near you.
Near, we've got them on us.
The phrase, we have the builders in.
We've been infiltrated.
It's, to use the track reference, it's like the opening sequence of Star Trek The Motion Picture, where the Enterprise is just being refitted again and again, or possibly even Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, when it's also being refitted.
But in fact, it wasn't this noisy in a vacuum.
No, that's very true. Anyway, Ian, ace writer, has produced so many top novels, former journalist, but as yet I don't believe you're a keen fan of the Star Trek television series, or indeed movie series, are you?
I haven't been, no. I don't follow that sort of genre.
Yeah. Sad, isn't it, really, Chris?
Well, you've got to have someone who isn't, you know.
Well, I'm sure you'll live a happy little life.
Yeah, well...
One of my best friends is, actually. She's...
I've got this friend who might be a...
She dragged me up to the museum once to watch some... have a look at some memorabilia.
Ah, yes.
Well, Chris's wonderful niche on the whole sequence is that he actually deals with the science behind Star Trek, and indeed lots of episodes. I mean, almost the most recent, because obviously the latest Star Trek, the official magazine, well worth purchasing from Titan Publications, actually focuses on the climate change, you have to say, because you actually taught Chris about global warming and the climate change allegory of Force of Nature.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we changed the format of the regular column that I write, which is called Treknology. But it's looking for links between existing technologies and developing technologies in the real world and what's been presented in Star Trek before. And most of the articles so far have been the original series, and taken into consideration we're knocking on the door of 51, 52 years old, and the allegories within those stories are still entirely resonant today.
Mobile
it's just
phones,
extraordinary.
Tablets,
exactly.
Tricorders.
Artificial intelligence, loads and loads of medical stuff. I mean, there's an X prize to develop a tricorder over in the States, $1 million if you do, and I think someone's getting very close. You've got all sorts of concepts as well. I mean, we both know that Arthur C. Clarke invented the concept of geodesic satellites for communication. And science fiction's got a very rich history of guesswork, shall we say, science fiction, science fact, it can be very, very close, and that's mostly what I've done for the last 12 years for Star Trek magazine.
We have
Didn't Asimov have something like that?
He did. Well, he invented the three laws of robotics, so that's not bad going for a science fiction writer.
Without which, Noonien Singh would probably not have ever sort of put together the joys of often wrong, Singh, and Data.
And then, you know, then his brother, he completely ignored the Data as well. Person, absolutely. Exactly. Not a nice android.
A nice android. Ian, I'd love to set you a challenge of... somehow, in your latest novel, introducing the words and phrase laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory.
Well, doesn't really enter the sort of rule of a bare-knuckle fighter, does it?
No. I don't know.
Yes. That might be the prize.
Yeah, as opposed to becoming a classic doorman, this bare-knuckle fighter actually always wants to work within laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory.
Always
work.
Wanted one, and the only way to do it is to fight his way to the top.
Exactly. So it did that. So
I thought I could have a sort of one of his defeated opponents asked to be beamed up somewhere.
Oh, no. That's not bad.
It's very good, particularly this time of the morning. Just coming around to 22 minutes to 9 a.m. In case you're wondering, there we are. Ian,
incidentally, I've got a little triumph moment. Bob, according to my book, I finished it basically now, and I'm getting it the cover done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, as I say, about a bare knuckle fighter. So what I'm going to do is have the cover of the book just have a bare fist with the title and my name on it. And Glenn McCrory is a friend of mine, ex-world champion, is going to provide the fist.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, that's authenticity that
I like
do.
That.
Exactly, yes. I'm not sure what sort of shape the fist will be. Will it be a clenched fist? Will it be a...
Oh, yes, clenched fist, yes.
Clenched fist. Covered in blood?
No, nothing too over the top. Just,
You don't want to frighten the readers, really, even if it's online.
Yes, you do.
There seeks to find science fiction manuscripts.
There you go. Is this what you pay your money
scare
for?
Them,
scare them witless. That's what you want.
Hey, this will come. Wheeling on the way to bed now.
This is horrible. I want to buy another one. That's what you want.
Yeah, exactly. Scare me again.
Game of bare knuckle fighters. It's astounding from that point of view. Chris, what kind of drew you to the notion of Star Trek? I mean, because I know we've spoken off air and clearly within the University of Lincoln, of course, your role is within our creative writing team.
That's right.
Well, the ace sort of folk there. Because, of course, there's also Warhammer, which we haven't talked about.
Absolutely, yeah. The Star Trek was always a favourite of mine, and originally started writing comics in 1994. And one of the first professionally published piece of work I had was with Malibu Comics, which was an offshoot of Marvel in the States. It was just actually a matter of sending stuff away to them at that point, because there wasn't a lot of email going around in them days. And that's how I started. But it was a natural kind of progression for me to write something. There's an old adage, if you're going to be a writer, write what you know. And I was always a lifelong fan of Star Trek, and I started with the comic books, and then I kind of gravitated towards the magazines and the Star Trek Fact Files, which ran for, 3, 4, 5 years I was working on that. The Warhammer was relatively recent, but came around because I wanted to go into writing prose fiction.
Yeah.
And also, one of my ex-students, because I've been teaching for 23 years now, was one of the senior editors at Warhammer. I went for a drink with him in Grimsby.
It's very important that we set our students out into the world to actually look after us in our more chronically advanced
times. That
is
exactly what I've been doing for 2 decades now, and I'm sure you've done the same thing, Alex. Yeah. And we just went for a drink because he became a friend, and he said, would you fancy having a crack? And I went, absolutely, I would, because I was looking to kind of transition into prose anyway, and I knew something of the Warhammer universe, nothing like a lot of people do. And that was 6 years ago. So now I'm onto my fifth audio drama. I got a novel out last year. It's just crazy. So,
and Ian, from your own perspective, I don't think any of your novels have been translated into graphic narrative or indeed sequential storytelling form.
Absolutely nothing. They've stood and fallen, mainly fallen on their own merits.
I think I'll pass at least one copy over to Chris. He can have a little perusal and say what about you. If the road to perdition can actually do it, then I'm sure
anybody can. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, based on a comic book, was it really? Yeah, honestly, really.
It's the multi-phasic storytelling and multi-platform storytelling.
Multi-phasic storytelling. That's very good.
Yes, I thought I'd drop that in there. Particularly as Future 2.0 is also taking place at the University of Lincoln in the very near future.
Nice.
It's all great stuff there. Ian, Chris tragically has to leave us in a few moments, so I'm going to actually ask you to put those last two questions to him for the 40... Well, actually, a little later, about 33 minutes he's actually been with us as a midweek drive soul. Without any midweek drive acts at all, because as we've heard, Sheila is poorly, well, her back seized up, which is not good, really. Holly is also sorting out various other bits and pieces, and Lauren Wood, well, we had hoped she'd be here, but I think the alarm might have failed to go off
me.
Again.
I think it's me. They knew I was going, that was it, but now we're not turning up for him. No way.
Well, we still to come. We've got Lucy Jones, nutritionist and television presenter, all about living a balanced life. We've got the deputy director of the German Tourist Board discussing the Christmas market phenomenon. Wow. Strange, really. And Louis Savvy, wonderful soul, founder and creator of the Sci-Fi London event. We'll be talking about a special November science fiction event that's taking place in London as well. So lots of things to access on our podcast, Chris, when you can
go
there. I wouldn't sort of suggest you take your radio into the classroom whilst you, because that might...
No, I don't know, we'll give him something to listen to instead of me, quite frankly.
Hey, ho.
I can hear the cheers from here. Like a 9 o'clock class.
Ian, would you like to put those last two questions to Dr. Chris Dowes, please?
Chris, have you enjoyed your visit to the studio today?
It's been absolutely fabulous. It's been a bit of a flying visit, and it's been slightly interrupted by mechanical noise, not including me. yeah, it's been great, and I would very much like to come back, if that's at all possible.
You've taken away my second question. Which I've forgotten anyway, so...
Don't worry, Ian. I think we can pretty much guarantee that, subject to the universe unfolding in the way that we hope it's unfolding, and warp drives not necessarily sort of wearing out things, that Chris will be back with us probably in 7 days from now.
If we can arrange that, would be super. Thank you very much, Alex. Excellent.
Meanwhile, back in the days of the Guardians of the Galaxy...
possibly dedicated to Mike Ashley. Maybe not. Things are going to get easier. Things are going to get brighter. Celebrate and rejoice. You've beaten Crystal Palace 1-0, Ian Lennox. 1-0.
Yes, I went to the game. It was a drab match. Oh. And funny enough, you know, that I don't know if you've been to the game recently, but going up this, I went to a sort of entertainment area and walked into the ground, into the arena, and there's hundreds and hundreds of people going up these steps, and one bloke coming down. Uh-huh. This is before the kickoff.
Yes.
And it so happened we confronted each other. We couldn't do anything else. Mm-hmm. I was trapped in. And I suddenly said to him, "Do you know something we don't?" Because he was going out, where everyone else was going in. And he said, "Yes." And never, I never saw him again. Mm-hmm. So obviously he did. It was a dreadful game.
But on the other side of things, Rafa Benitez has led you into the top 10. I mean, possibly challenging for a European place. At one stage, you're in sixth position. It's just astounding, really.
Can I make more sense of you, look here? I can do another 24 points so we can get to 40.
Oh, please. You know, that's like saying...
I think what may happen is, the hope is that Ashley will have sold the club come January. Mm-hmm. And there will be investment in the January sales window, and we will then secure our safety and possibly even a top half place. I don't know.
That's almost as crazy as saying Huddersfield Town is going to beat Manchester United. Oh, hang on.
I
just did.
Yay! Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
Celebrate and rejoice, you see. Yeah. Positive things, positive good materials, which is always good, which allows obviously the sole inheritors of good quality football to be fired.
I must have been your lot doing quite well this
season. Our lot, of course, Manchester City continue ever onwards. Let's move.
I reckon you could play in goal for them and still this goal.
I wouldn't go. You know, I'm very much of the era of Joe Corrigan and Lord.
Oh, Bessons, Joe Corrigan. That was when Malcolm Allison was.
He was indeed,
the manager, and Joe Mercer
and Tony Book after that. Indeed, John Bond. Indeed, actually.
I used to live near Main Road where they played in those days. Mm-hmm. I used to go every Saturday. It was Francis Lee, Colin Bell, Mike Summerby,
David Connor, Neil Young.
Alan
Oakes, of course. Mike Doyle,
Davies,
Glyn Pardo, ex-Newcastle in the case of Wynn Davies, which is quite nice from that point of view, and of course latterly Peter Barnes, Jed Keegan, and a variety of other fine folk were actually.
Yes, there was a chap called Mellor as well. His son's now on Sky.
Ian Mellor.
Yeah, he was a postman.
Yeah, there
I think.
We are. And indeed, Ian Bowyer was also one of them.
They won the cup.
We could go on mentioning lots of names that people would need to actually look on Google to sort through, but we shan't. I'll go to this next little feature, Ian, because it's official, apparently. We're a nation of no-nos. British people are feeling the pressure to live a perfect lifestyle, saying no to experiences we think are not good to us, unaware that by avoiding these things, we could be impacting our health and well-being. 88% of British folk are sacrificing things that make them happy and turning their backs on takeaways, nights at the pub and snacking in favour of home-cooked meals, gym sessions and early nights. We just can't find the right balance. Does this sound like your life, Ian?
No, it doesn't. Ah. Well, going to the pubs, that does, but... certainly not in the gym and things.
Well, the activities British folk are most likely to say no to include ordering a takeaway, 43% for that, snacks between meals, 40% for that, and drinks at the pub, 37%. That's over a third of the population will say, fancy going down to the pub? No. That would be their response.
Oh, yeah. That's
interesting, more men, 43%, avoid snacks between meals than women, with 16% of men strongly agreeing that they avoid snacks because they see it as an indulgence, and over a quarter of adults regret snacking between meals.
I wonder where they got the database from.
Well, this is a survey that we're going to be discussing.
Big market on Saturday night, isn't it?
With TV, I'll put that to television presenter and nutritionist Lucy Jones, and see if she's actually got any response to that side of things. Because it's a case of balance. Balance is everything. You need to have a balanced, healthy and happy lifestyle. Because although we're saying that, it's all down to the fact that modern guilt is impacting on our studies and indeed our activities. So that's something.
So it's called guilt, modern guilt.
Yeah, modern guilt. Yes, it's, we just don't know where to go. And as I say, it's that maybe we need to say yes as opposed to saying no.
But then, of course, they'll say, you shouldn't have said yes in the first place, and... finally, Christmas markets are occurring over the next couple of weeks. Christmas markets up and down the country will be opening their doors, from mulled wine to mince pies and bratwurst. Local markets are aiming to spread the festive cheer. In a couple of weeks, we'll have Sally Munday from Lincolnshire Agricultural Society coming in to talk once again about the Lincoln Food and Gift Fair. And then, literally shortly after that, in early December, we've got the Lincoln Christmas Market. We might hopefully be able to get over to Birmingham to see their Christmas market. But we've got the... Deputy Director of the German Tourist Board coming along to actually join us to talk about German markets and various other things. That, of course, would be, wonderful Jeanette Schuchmann and then Brandenburg spokesperson Regina Zibel. So that's Regina and Jeanette. I will be talking about, I suppose, why German Christmas markets kind of still tend to lead the field, really, when it comes to beating the winter blues.
What's a Christmas market? Does it mean the goods that you sell during Christmas? Or?
It's what you get in one of the shining blue lights of the old town Christmas market, Blauer Lichtenglatz. I take a stroll through a Sanssouci Park. It's just a wonderful. Why not experience the authenticity of a German Christmas market in Germany? Just a thought. More of that to come. Ian, what does the rest of the day have in store for yourself? We've already heard from Gabriella earlier in the programme about the Gibraltarian Magic Festival that's coming up and how she's going to be doing a variety of previews for that. What about yourself, Ian? Is it going to be a case of you're going to be more positive in life and celebrate the ongoing premiership scenario that is Newcastle United?
I think I'm going to do a little bit more work on my book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And... I'll do a bit of shopping, and I'm hoping to meet some friends for a coffee tomorrow. Oh. So I'm going to fix that up.
Sweet.
And also, I'm going to the rugby on Sunday, so Newcastle Falcons are playing Leicester.
Is that rugby league or rugby union?
Because rugby union.
Yes, so you're not a rugby league, so the Rugby League World Cup is perhaps passing you by, is it? Or do you sort of access it?
Yes, it's up here. We've got a team at Gateshead, trying to break into it, but I don't know, there's a culture gap, I think. The rugby union team's doing quite well now. It's winning more games than it's losing, and it has really made great strides. It's one of the best, I would say one of the top six or seven teams in the country now.
So
I'm looking forward to seeing them play in Leicester.
And as we found out with respect to Gabriella in Gibraltar, that Frodo was, again, unconscious, we need to ask the question from the feline perspective, how are Ollie and Obo?
They're not too... I'm afraid Ollie, he's got some sight problems. He's,
I know.
He's got an atrophy behind his eyes, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I've got to sort of be very... I've got to watch him very closely to see if he actually does go blind. He may have to become a house cat.
Clearly, yeah. But then again, what better way to actually sort of have another listener eagerly listening to everything that comes through the airwaves via sirenonline.co.uk or the TuneIn radio application app for Siren Radio. I mean, there's always a shining light that comes through. Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have.
Will you be back next week?
I do hope so.